Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming, with your host, Shannon Holiday, and me, Letitia Thomas.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming. I'm your host, Shannon Holiday, and I am joined in the studio again with Letitia Thomas. How are we going this afternoon, Tish?
We're going great. The coffee is running out now.
For you it is.
It is, yes.
It's just infused with me. I've got nothing but energy. I'm rigiding around the whole place and I'm ready to go.
You say that. I'm the one playing with the hacky sack you gave me.
I think that's going to help you with your ADHD later in the episode.
I like how we're still going with this. Like every episode you're like, and you've got problems.
And you've got problems. I'm the same though. I've got plenty of problems. We just don't talk about them.
I know, you just bring it up every time the episode starts.
I thought you were open with it.
I mean...
I mean, you were to me.
Are we? I don't know.
You are now.
We don't know what's actually wrong.
You haven't been diagnosed, so...
No. Probably no. Never will.
Do you reckon you could stop playing with that hacky sack for the rest of the episode?
Yeah, I'd fidget with something else.
Exactly. You would just divert also, attention.
It's so distracting because the mic is like eye level with me.
Yeah, because you're short.
Yeah.
Mm.
So
we gave you pillows.
Yeah, I know, but it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
It's not.
It kind of just sinks
in. It's not foolproof.
It just sinks into the chair now.
Like, yeah.
So you still just kind of, by the end of the episode, you're still falling down far enough to where you're kind of like looking up at the mic.
Yeah, I'm always distracted because it's, like, I'm sort of cross-eyed looking at it.
For anyone not at home, we don't have the boom mics that have the arms that you can kind of like...
No.
That are on springs where you can kind of move them up and down as you move around, like making gestures and that. They're on these metal stands.
Like a mic stand. But that's a normal mic stand. That's why I hold them like I'm about to go perform a concert.
Yeah.
Because it's in front of me.
You can't make them go further down though. You can make them go up. On the table. So say if you're standing or something, that'd work for that. But you can't go further down because we're quite short. And these chairs aren't great.
It's not a great setup.
It's not. We're going to have a studio at some point. We're going to start a GoFundMe page. If you want us to have a state-of-the-art studio with all the newest equipment, please pay us now. Kidding. Anyway, what was this week like, Tish? You watched a lot of films, you just told me.
I got busy this week. Not intentionally, it just kind of happened. Well, I started out the week stressing that I wasn't bright enough. I was reading the book that Apocalypse Now is based on, Heart of Darkness. There we go, Joseph Conrad. We got there in the end. And I was like, maybe I'm not quite bright. And then, so I was like stressing about that because it happens. And then I read something and it's like, oh, by the way, human brains are shrinking. So I just had a whole, like Monday was just like, oh, great, cool. So
overload.
We're getting dumber and I'm not as smart as I want to be. Which, you know, it's a thought that haunts me every so often.
Is this it for me? Have I hit the pinnacle?
I'm just like, you know what? I'm not that bright.
Look,
then I talk to people and I go, oh, I'm okay.
I was about to say, it's a spectrum and I'm pretty sure like you're not on like the tail end of
the
bell curve.
You're not
stupid. Like,
no, I know I'm not stupid. I just don't think I'm.
I don't think you're going to get into Mensa either at the same time.
I don't want to. I just think, you know, anyway, so I get plagued by thoughts of, am I smart enough often? And then, I don't know, I just went and watched a bunch of stuff as well as finishing Heart of Darkness. Like I started it.
Yeah, I don't think it's actually a wildly long book, is it?
No, it's more of a novella, but it is quite like dense.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
There's three parts. There's no chapters. It just goes.
It just flows.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Have you seen Apocalypse Now?
Yeah, we watched it last year and we talked about it.
I just watched it separately from you. I forgot.
Yeah, I've definitely seen it.
I think I've mentioned this before. I watched the 4-hour version by accident.
The Redux?
I didn't realize. Yeah. I was like, Redux, that's newer. It's fine. It was, 4 hours. I'm glad I did though, because you get more. It fleshes out the story. You just get more Apocalypse Now. It's fine with me. I really liked it.
I know. I really liked Apocalypse Now. I'd like to rewatch it at some point, but not quite yet.
Watch Ad Astra next, the Brad Pitt space one. It's also based on Heart of Darkness.
I'm trying to think if I've seen that.
It's only about 4 years old. You might not have.
I've definitely watched part of it, I believe.
You might be thinking of First Man.
No.
With Ryan Gosling.
No, I think I've watched part of it. I don't know if I watched the whole film.
Worth checking out, but it's very similar vein.
But yeah, let's talk about what we did end of last week. We went to see a movie.
We did, didn't we?
Yeah.
We did after we recorded.
We saw The Fall Guy.
The Fall Guy with Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt.
How did you find it?
I enjoyed it. I think for me, it didn't quite hit the mark in terms of what I was expecting. I think it had really fun moments overall. I think a little bit of the story was just a bit messy. I think it had...
pacing.
It had pacing issues.
Yeah,
it had
pacing issues. It could have been a lot shorter.
Yeah.
There was a lot in the middle where you're like, where are we going? You got a bit lost.
Yeah, where's
a bit
the drive of this story now? What's the point of it? Really, it would have been a really good hour and a half movie or an hour 40 movie, but it's a 2 hour film. And I think it just, yeah, there's a little bit in the middle there that drags on and kind of gets a bit aimless. But I still enjoyed it. I thought the performances were great.
I think I said that to you as well. I was like, if it didn't have these two heading this film, like it would have just
done
been
well at all.
Abysmal, but they're such great actors and you want to see them on screen that it 100%. Works.
Like Ryan Gosling, just like we said, I think last week with the Emma Stone episode, was he's just full of charm. Mm-hmm. And he's, yet again, same thing with this movie, is he's so charming. So you just want to follow him on this journey.
Yeah, I was talking to one of my film friends, and we were laughing about just on-set romances and how they're just everywhere all the time. And this really kind of, it was a film made for filmmakers, really, and especially for stunt guys. It was like a love letter to the stunt.
Well, I mean, David Leitch? Is the director.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's an ex stunt man himself.
Oh, that makes.
Yeah.
There we go.
And I think he was a stunt coordinator or something on Hell or High Water and Sicario or something like that. So a bunch of those kind of movies. And then he moved into his own.
Explains how he got Emily Blunt.
Exactly right. And then he did a couple of other movies. Then he did Bullet Train and then this.
Yes. Yeah, I think Bullet Train was a stronger film.
I think that
but
was also
I had
a strong
fun
film.
With The Fall Guy. Like,
yeah,
I didn't not have fun at
I
any
would
point.
Still tell people to go out and see it. I think the masses will still enjoy this film, but it's not perfect.
Yeah,
but it's still fun.
I then went and I watched Spirited Away because a friend of mine and I have now been talking about going to Japan.
Yes,
so
you have.
I was like, you know what? Let's just watch more Japanese films. I've seen some Ghibli stuff. Ghibli.
I was about to ask that question to you. I'm like, is it Ghibli or is it Ghibli?
I honestly can't remember. Someone come and yell at me.
Yeah, either way is fine.
I really enjoyed this one. I don't want to give too much away because Shannon hasn't delved into that yet. I did like this one.
And
it's
we are
one
doing
of
a
my
separate episode too.
One of my more favorite of the ones that I've already seen. Yeah, I thought it was sweet. And then, I mean, man, I got through a lot of films. I then went and started watching. I went to see Challengers on Tuesday.
So I had previously seen Challengers the week earlier. I went and saw it, I think, opening night, actually. I was at a work conference in the city and that finished up at like 5 and I think I booked in at like 6:30. So I had to get from Brisbane to like out to the suburbs in like an hour. So I was going from like 8 a.m. till not getting home till like 9 p.m. after seeing this film. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so tired. But regardless of my mental state, I definitely love this film.
Yeah, you 5-starred it.
I 5-starred it. I loved it. I thought it was really well performed, really well shot, and I just love the out of chronological order of the presentation of this film.
Right, okay.
I loved it. What were your thoughts?
I very much enjoyed it. Mm. I don't think I loved it,
mm-hmm.
But that's not to say that I didn't like it, if that makes any sense. Like, it's not because it's bad. I just didn't think it was perfect. That being said, like, what films are perfect? Almost none, you know? I'm not slighting it. I just didn't find it.
I see so many people on Letterboxd give like 5 stars out like it's like chump change.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I feel like 5 stars should be reserved to those films that just time and place, perfect film. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think I've only given out like 18 or something 5-star ratings out of
however many
1,300 films.
Yeah. No,
you know what I mean? Like, there's not that many perfect films out there.
I think.
And yet again, everything's subjective, but.
My main thing with this one is pacing.
Yeah.
I liked so much of it. I do think at some point, though, it could have been slightly shorter. There were some bits where they sort of did a bit much in that, like, they could have just left a lot of it out and it still would have made sense. And I think my other gripe was I don't think they knew exactly what to do with Zendaya's character in this.
How do you mean?
I just think I've seen like a lot of her performances and I think she's absolutely stellar. Mm-hmm. This one was good, but there was something missing. And I think it was the fact that obviously this film is their film. it's not her film as characters, right?
Oh yeah, that's what I was about to say. She's not the central.
But I think they at some point in the film, obviously she changes their lives and motivates them in certain ways. So she's driving it to a degree, but I think they needed to drive it 100% of the way. So sort of putting her into she was but then wasn't kind of left it a little bit like, where are we going with this? Because then at the very end, it comes back and it ties it all up beautifully. Like this whole film. The other thing I was surprised about is they pitched the trailer like it's a way more sexy film.
Mm.
There is very little sex in this, except it's all sex, but there's very little sex in it.
It's a sexually charged film.
I was surprised.
The actual sex on screen is very limited to like three scenes. Mm-hmm. I think.
And even then it was pretty...
It's PG.
Pretty PG, yeah.
It's PG. I think I saw a report actually. I think a Hollywood Reporter put it out. This is an aside, but go with me. Is the percentage of sex in films has declined by like something like 20%.
But the sex we're getting is way more explicit and full on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I was going to talk to you about this actually.
I did read that. Because
I read the headline. I didn't go into it. Mm. But it is true. There's this thing, and a lot of they're saying Gen Z kids don't want to, like, they've gone back to the conservative ways of our parents where they're like, oh no, too much sex on screen.
Mm.
And I'm like, it's fine. Put it in more if you have to.
You got to remember, they're the...
Do you know what I mean, though?
They're that bubble of, you know, adults where they kind of grew up in this COVID four-year period.
The kids, yeah.
And, like, that, like, Tinder hookup culture didn't exist for them like it did for, like, previous, like, generations. So I guess there's just a disconnect between casual sex and, like, being exposed to that world as much as...
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. That's just my thought.
I don't know, because I think you watch a lot of, like, yeah, like you said, like older films and stuff, and they had more sex in it, but it wasn't always like,
but even like
horrific to
nudity,
watch. It was just
like
casual.
You can watch like a random action film that might be MA, and you'll just see like, you know, like a pair of boobs pop up on screen, and it just happens. Like, you know, you just don't think about it. And now these days, like, it's no film is doing that.
No, it is interesting because, like, obviously, if you watch a lot of foreign film as well, like in European cinema. Definitely.
Oh yeah, that's.
There's so much nudity in it, but it's not sexual. It's like it just is. It's more casual, and it's interesting. Yeah. Then you go and watch a film like Hollywood, especially.
Very
conservative.
Like, that's got to do with, I think, the political climate as well. I don't think anyone making these films wants to offend any group of individuals because it's a business.
Yeah,
we've got to maximize profits. Therefore, if it's getting any bad publicity because of XYZ, it's going to earn less, blah, blah, blah. And so they play it safe.
Got very conservative recently in the last maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, COVID. I feel like it's got something to do with it. Just my opinion.
Yeah.
Because they saw how fragile the movie industry was.
Yeah, true.
No one could go in to see a movie. So they're playing it safe because they want people to make this money that they've lost for a couple of years back.
Yeah, they want bums in seats. But
exactly.
They're putting some really boring.
It's very stuff. Just like middle of the park stuff. Play it safe.
Yeah, I watched another movie for the topic of this week, so I'll get into that a bit later.
Yeah.
But I also watched Miller's Girl.
Tell me about that because I haven't seen it yet. I'm planning on seeing it at
Jenna
some point.
Ortega, Martin Freeman, I don't know what it is.
Romance film?
Yeah, it's pitched. Again, it's one of those ones that pitched in the trailer. It looks like, oh, it's going to be scandalous and sexy and like the teenage girl like woos.
I've heard nothing but negative reviews about this film.
It's one of those weird things. It's not as bad as you think it's going to be, but it's also not as good as you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
In that, like, it's pitched as it's going to be super full on, super full of it, super blah. You don't get that. Instead, what you get is this like, I don't even know, like weird. It feels like a kid. Has written some like sexy fan fiction-y type thing, but not a lot actually happens. But then at the same time, if that's what she was intending it to feel like, she did achieve that.
Okay.
So it's like, did this film fail because our expectations were different? Or did she actually pull off exactly what she intended, which is a feat, but not something anyone wants to watch?
Yeah, that's a tough call because... Yeah, it wasn't marketed really at all, this film. So it's a movie that's like word of mouth, basically.
Yeah.
The only reason I found out about it is, you know, Letterboxd, there's people like reviewing it and stuff. So the people I follow obviously went, oh, you click on them, you're like, okay, well, it's getting negative reviews, XYZ. Maybe if it had a better marketing strategy, it's like, actually, this movie is this, It could have done better.
Yeah, so. I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, I didn't love it. Let's get that out of the way. But I don't know if it's worse than I expected or better than I expected, if yeah, that makes
sense. That's not great. But if then, a film's like, doing that to your brain.
The performances from the actors in it, spot on.
Yeah, I think Martin Freeman and Jenna Ortega are great actors.
It's so just
this the quality of what they've been given.
There's a lot of confusing stuff.
Okay. Yeah. I'll check this out because it's I think it's on streaming now, so I think
you I don't know. I VPN'd it but then had a whole problem with that. So guys,
don't VPN on Netflix.
You might not. Or Amazon.
Apparently, yeah, my also. Amazon. Apparently you're in Japan. So
yeah.
You got that fixed and working. But I have
turned my VPN off.
I mean, I have a way of watching some newer movies for free myself. So,
what else did you watch? Because I've got a few more, but
I ended up watching. I've got a couple of films that I ended up watching. This not as many as you though. So you did very well.
We swapped, didn't we?
Yeah. Usually it's me. I watched Memento.
I've not seen it yet.
Christopher Nolan's film from 2000. That's starring Guy Pearce. Wow. Do you know the concept of this film?
I've known it, but I don't.
Yeah, no, so right it's a film shot in reverse chronological order. So what you do is you literally get the end of the story in the first scene.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then it plays backwards. So imagine like a couple of minutes, it'll play out, and then it'll cut to the next last part of the movie and play those like couple of minutes out, and then you get the start of that next scene that you just saw. But there's also a timeline part that's played in chronological order in terms of forward. They're in black and white.
Oh, so one part of the story is going forward, one's going backwards. And oh, so it's like the last 5 years. That's a musical.
Yeah, it's basically the same.
Okay, so I can get my head around it. Because at first you're saying, I was like, I'm not going to get my head around it. But then
so it
I've
meets,
likened it to a musical.
It's in the middle of the story, which is actually what is the end of the film.
Yep.
So you get the whole thing. Yeah, which is really cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool in concept. It's based on a short story that his brother wrote, Jonathan Nolan, who is the creator of Fallout and Westworld.
Interesting. I didn't know there was another one.
Jonathan?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. The brother, he's more of a writer and concept creator.
So who cares about him?
Right? No. Yeah, so they work together on Memento and so good. I loved it because you get the little pieces throughout the story and you're like, well, obviously there's like a history with that part X, and then you find out later. It's like, the reason why it's shot in this way is the main character of Guy Pearce, something happened to him previously in his life and he's got short-term memory loss. He's got his long-term memory, so he knows who he is.
Yeah.
And he's got like, you know, how to function as a human basically, but anything more than, let's say 10, 15 minutes, he'll forget before that. And everyone's like, well, what do you remember? And you're like, he goes, my wife and her dying. That's the last thing he remembers. Because the catalyst of this film is a few people attempted to break into his place and attack his wife. She does get killed, but he tries to defend her and he gets knocked out. And that's how he loses his memory loss. And his revenge story is based on trying to find his killer of his wife. And the last shot you see, which is, well, okay, the first shot you see, which is the end of the film, is him shooting someone, but you have no context.
Oh, okay.
And
it sounds cool.
Yeah, and you slowly get drip thread the story as to why he's finding this particular person, who he's connected to. It's a wonderful film. It's also got the lady out of The Matrix in it.
Oh.
Carrie Ann Moss.
Yep.
Yeah, she's in it as well. She's like a... kind of like a side character that
I think I first saw her in Jessica Jones, actually.
Oh, yeah. Because
remember she's the boss who's like a real hard ass. Yeah.
If you haven't seen this film, bloody hell, go see it.
I have not.
It's a lot of fun. And if you like a bit of a thriller crime mystery, you're going to enjoy it. You're just going to, you know, really enjoy it. So that's what I watched this week. That's the big one I watched. I watched not a lot of much else. I think I had one of those weeks where it was like a bit of work, unfortunately, took over. I did watch The Book of Eli, though, as well.
Not seen that.
It is a Denzel Washington film from about, I think, 2007, roughly. I had the DVD of it, Blu-ray.
Sorry, for anyone at home, Shannon's an elitist.
I have the Blu-ray.
sorry, just what you
I picked it up because, you know, living with other flatmates and stuff, I think it got mixed in with my collection.
So you stole it?
No, they left it here when they moved out, and I don't think they cared if they left the Book of Eli with me. So it's been there ever since, and I never watched it. I was like, oh, I'm going to chuck it on. Yeah, it's a weird one. It's a very religious film.
Oh, Book of Eli, of course.
Yeah, it's set in like a post-apocalyptic America, and it's basically a journey from A to B that Denzel Washington's on in to save the Bible. Because like books have been all burnt during this post-apocalyptic, and there's no versions of the Bible left. Gary Oldman plays a villain, and you know how Gary Oldman always does a wonderful job as a villain. He's trying to get the Bible to basically become a dictator using the way that, you know, people do with the Bible. Excerpt sentence here, in my own way, you'll follow me because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Extremist is what I'm saying. So there's a bit of a clash there. It's got Mila Kunis in it.
Interesting.
As like the, I wouldn't say love interest, but like the female lead who goes along on the journey with him. It was fine. I think I gave it like 3 stars out of 5. It's one of those forgettable films. It's Denzel playing Denzel Washington. He tends to do this a lot. He plays that really quick-witted character who's strangely really good at fighting every single type of person. And yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of over it. Like, it worked with Training Day because it was an amazing film around him as well. But then he's just done it ever since. Like, you got this, you got The Equalizer, he's done a bunch of other films where he just plays the kind of the same role.
Yeah, I remember him.
He's very typecast.
Back in the 90s, like Bone Collector.
Yeah, it's the same thing. When he played,
who was a detective in that? Anyway.
Yeah.
But he just sits in a bed because he's, yeah.
Yeah.
Quadriplegic? Something like, yeah. Can't remember the details, but.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate that he's a little bit typecast.
Mm.
Deja Vu, same thing.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't really watched any of his films because I kind of just know about them anyway. I'm like, yeah, I kind of get the gist.
Oh, yeah, okay. He's going to do this because I know what he does in every film.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit unfortunate. So this is how I felt with the Book of Eli as well. So I watched it. I've seen the Blu-ray back in the shelf. And that's it for me this week.
I watched a couple more that I want to bring up. Yeah. I watched May, December.
Yeah, I want to see that. It's just my watch, sorry.
It's yours,
it's me
not mine.
This time, not you.
I know, I turned it off. miracles do happen sometimes. So I watched May, December with Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore. And then, who's the kid in it? I was going to bring him up. I've forgotten his name. Anyway. It's a genius film. I know a lot of people were like on the fence about whether they liked it or didn't like it because of the way it's.
I heard it's like a very told. Like high anxiety inducing movie. I don't know why yet though, because I actually don't know what it's about.
I didn't feel that, but maybe I'm just so desensitized to the idea of like. I was getting straight up to say pedophilia, but that sounds full on. But
right,
also,
is that the angle it's about?
Yeah, so it's based on. A true story, loosely, more in spirit than in the actual
true life events. Yeah,
100% events. Because this isn't like a biopic, so it wasn't like we're gonna just focus on these people, like you know, real life documentary stuff, and go for it. Basically, Charles Melton plays this kid who was 12, and in what really happened was his teacher seduced him and then they had a full relationship, had kids, everything like that. 20 years later, that relationship sort of breaks down. But it's so full on. So this one in the film, she just worked for him. She was like his manager or whatever. And they started this romance and they have kids and the whole thing. And then Natalie Portman's character is coming in because they're going to make a film on her and the family. So she wants to pick up mannerisms.
Yep.
Understand her, everything like that. But so they tell this in like a really like dramatic way rather than like, holy, this is like full on serious stuff. But watch this one. Don't take that approach and be like, that's the wrong tone, because when it needs to make the points it makes, it
hits.
Does it really well. I don't want to get in and tell you exactly what happens and how you're supposed to feel and everything like that, because it'll ruin watching it. But it's a very interesting take, and it kind of goes, oh, why do we all want to spectate on this kind of stuff all the time?
Yeah, it's making a commentary on that
rather than the actual story about these people that existed. That being said, the guy that it's based on, he was not thrilled, but
didn't love the fact that it was based on.
No, well, they didn't consult him or anything like that. They just kind of went
like, they said it was loosely based.
And made it. So
it's enough away from him to go, oh.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those morally ambiguous if you really want to get into the making of way. But I thought it was a beautiful film.
Yeah, and no, I've heard good things about it, actually. I've been wishing to watch it.
Well, it came out in America in December last year.
Yeah, it's a 2023 film, not a 2024 film. Didn't get access to it.
A wanky cinema in Brisbane to go watch it.
Or something.
Yeah, literally.
Dendy. It's like one...
Dendy Cooperoo.
One movie theatre, one...
showing.
Time slot, yeah. And you're like, I just don't have time to get there for one thing.
So I've
it wasn't a wide release.
This and watched it.
Well, it's... I think it's a Netflix release.
Yeah. Same with this
in America,
one
but
I did.
Also it's on physical media now. Mm-hmm. It's available in stores.
DVD and Blu-ray.
Blu-ray.
So yeah, and then I watched Strange Way of Life, which is an Ethan Hawke and Pedro Pascal Western romance. It's a 30-minute short film on Netflix. It's beautiful.
I remember us talking about it last year about
That's kind of what it is. I don't want to get into the plot of it because it's pointless in the sense of like
it's short.
30 minutes, just watch it.
Yeah.
But I really, really, really enjoyed this one. The one thing that took me out of it though, which is funny because we were talking about this a couple weeks ago, is they have a flashback to when they're young at one point, or like 20s young.
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously it's Ethan Hawke, right? So his teeth are like messed.
Yeah, right.
And then this guy's got full perfect braces teeth like 20 years earlier and you're like,
the teeth thing.
You
it
don't
keeps
feel
coming
like
up.
You're in a Western
it
living
takes,
in
it takes,
it takes
it
you
out,
out of
it.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was my little
and that's what yeah.
callback to our point a couple of weeks ago.
Did you VPN this?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then I tried to VPN one more movie and it locked me out of Netflix and I was like, oh, okay, we got halfway.
Oh, we'll revert that.
But the first bit of this movie, Fry Bread, something, something, something or other, was really great and I'm mad I can't watch
it. Until
it
just cut?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then I gave up on watching TV.
I think we should get into our topic of the week.
Yes, please. I did my research.
You did, yes. Rian Johnson this week.
You know I really just put this in there so you'd eventually finish Poker Face.
I think, well, it drove me to watch it. I had one episode left and I left it for months.
I know you did. This show came out at the beginning of last year.
Yeah, and I didn't watch them all in like a week or two. I watched like one roughly a week, which I was like, this is fine because it's kind of like, they're like mini movies, right?
I loved
like
it, yeah.
Each episode's kind of like its own
thing. Let's get
thing.
In. Straight yeah, in.
Let's talk about Poker Face. He created this and wrote a little bit of it. He didn't write the whole thing. He bookended.
He showran it, yeah.
He bookended it in terms of writing as well, which makes sense because the concept's his. So he's kind of like started it.
Do you want me to tell you how this came about?
Please do, because you'll know more than me, but I read a little bit.
Yes. So basically, Natasha Lyonne was friends with his wife, Karina Longworth, because she's done a podcast, which I haven't listened
heard
to
of
yet.
That, yeah.
I tried listening to it, but like a Mae West episode, but it's a lot and I needed to really pay attention. So I haven't got into it because I'm like mad that there's so much and I'm overwhelmed. Anyway, she was friends with her from that. They then went to an event for Rian Johnson. No, they went to an event for the wife and then she was sitting on the couch with Rian and then they became friends sort of through his wife, who's a genius as well apparently. And then they got to talking one day because, you know, writers and stuff, we go for coffee with our friends and then we make it work, which is what I've done with you now. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah,
all my
great.
Friends have just turned it to work, which tells you a lot about me. But anyway, so they were talking about it and they both liked a lot of the same kind of stuff. They were into old Columbo.
Yep.
They're both like big New York Times crosswords fans. Apparently he can do the crossword in a couple minutes, which is just mind blowing.
Rian.
Yeah, he's a genius. They're like at all these award ceremonies for Poker Face last year and they're all doing the New York Times crossword in the crowd. It's beautiful. Anyway, so they're friends, they're into all that. They were sort of just spitballing this idea and he went, oh yeah, like I'll write one for you, sure. But you know, that happens all the time. You talk about it.
Yeah.
But then a couple years later, he sort of delivered it to her and went, here you go. Like I've written it
here
and this
is
for you, which is kind of cool because it doesn't happen that often that people make good on
their word.
Yeah.
Like, because they've got so many other things, I guess, happening in life, especially
absolutely.
In Hollywood. Like, and remember, he's coming off the back of doing Star Wars Episode 8, Last Jedi, which would have taken up all of his time.
4 years.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
4 years, one project. Like, and I'm not talking like, oh, you've had this idea for 10 years and now you're making it. Like, he was making it for 4 years.
Yeah, exactly. For him to come through and kind of sort out Poker Face, I think it went well. It was good.
It's won a lot of awards, up for a bunch of Emmys. Mm. It won a Peabody Award, which I didn't really know much about them. Basically, they're like excellence.
I've heard of it.
They're excellence awards in media. So it's like, forget what anyone liked it or didn't like it.
Peabody.
This is like, yeah, it's up there. Yeah. And I love this. I watch this a lot.
You've watched it more than once, hey?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When it was coming out, I would watch it.
Each episode.
I'd stay up till about 11, 12 o'clock because it would come out.
Mm-hmm. I remember you saying
that. On a Thursday,
that
I would watch it.
And then watch it again a couple of times.
And then I would watch it again. And then I was on the plane to Dubai.
Yes.
I watched a couple episodes on the plane.
For me, what I like about Poker Face is, like I said, every episode's like its own unique movie.
Case of the week.
It's case of the week, but it's also, I love the structure of it.
It's like a how catch 'em.
It's, yeah, exactly. Like an old school, like whodunit kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Where
they show you at the very beginning.
You get about 20 minutes, or at least the first act is from the perspective of the villain. The killer, or like the setup. And then the acts 2 and 3 are basically from Natasha Lyonne's character's perspective of trying to, well, act two is basically her just living in that world.
Yep.
And then she gets connected to it. And act 3 is her trying to find out.
Yeah.
The connection to the killer, which I really love. I thought it's so well
so
done.
Much fun.
And it's in so many different settings as well throughout the 10 episodes.
He wrote this in that sense because he wanted to be able to have audiences. If you just want to watch one episode randomly, you can come in and watch one episode.
You can
watch them out of order and still get enjoyment out of in this way that TV used to be fun that way.
Yes.
Where like it was more yours kind of thing. Obviously, there's an amazing through line in this.
Well, it's only really the bookends that kind of
it starts and finishes
the story, like
because she's on the run, basically because her friend
really
got murdered.
It only comes up like one other time besides the first and last episode. Yeah.
Basically, her character, she's Charlie Kale, and she can tell when people are lying. She calls bullshit, but she doesn't know what the lie is.
She just can vibe.
Or why. She's just like, you're not telling me the truth.
Yeah,
which is how she sort of ends up cracking these cases because she pieces together.
Yeah. She knows
all of
the
lies,
so then she pokes at it and finds out what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good. She's a human lie detector, essentially.
Yeah. I love, there's a couple episodes in this show that I, there's a couple of episodes in this that I particularly loved. I think the one with the two old ladies.
Yeah.
She befriends these ladies and she thinks that they're the good guys in the world kind of thing.
No.
And you just have that, there's that moment where she realizes that she's been played by these people that she's
been so nice to kind of thing.
And just watching her world collapse in on itself.
Yeah. She gets so deflated.
Yeah.
And she realizes, cause she lives through them for like the first half of the movie, if not longer.
Yeah.
And celebrating their lives. And she kind of gets on board that, gets really in the hype train. And then when she kind of pieces the story together and realizes they're the bad ones in the story, she really, really kind of loses herself and deflates. And
because she's kind of this character that goes about life like
so free flowing.
Things happen, but you know what? It's a pretty good day. The sun's still shining.
Yeah.
I'm doing all right. I'm on
the
run.
The dog episode.
I love that so much. That came about because they wanted to do an episode with a dog in it as like the quote unquote bad guy. But they're like, how the hell can we spin that? And we can't kill a dog. That's so bad. Cause he quote unquote dies at one point.
Yeah.
They did it is they went, what if he's an arsehole dog? So this dog is like a fan of this radio host that spouts all this like MAGA stuff, like Donald Trump type love and stuff. And so it's just about this like racist, horrible, like arsehole-y dog. It's so funny.
It's so cute.
It
is a cute dog. It's very well done. Love it. Love it. Love this show. I'm glad there's a season 2 coming. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long that's going to take to make. As long as it's good and it's in the same vein as season 1,
I will
be on board.
That and then Orpheus Syndrome was an awesome episode of TV. That was hers with Alice Jew. The one with the guy, the Phil Tippett puppeteer type.
Yeah, that was Nick Nolte. Yeah,
and it's shot with all these like old school like film like references throughout it. It's all like it's about an old school filmmaker, and he's come away from the world of film, and he just stays in his little studio making puppets, and he's mad about the fact that you know everything's gone digital now, but he's also like you know sort of ruined because a kid got killed on a film set that he worked on, so he's just sort of mad about it.
Him a bit.
And she comes in and just starts hanging out with this puppeteer. But it's like one of the most beautifully shot episodes of TV I've seen.
Yeah, it's really well done. That and the one after that, the Shit Mountain one, really well done. That's got
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Because he's a friend of
Ryan. They're all friends. Yeah, because he's in a bunch of Ryan films. Mm-hmm.
Stephanie Hsu as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, she's in it. Yeah.
As this kleptomaniac.
So funny. It's got a beat. Bunch of big name actors in it.
Yeah, a lot of her friends, a lot of his friends come in this. So,
What he writes well is obviously murder mysteries. Uh-huh. And that's when I think we should get into the two kind of currents, the things he's currently working on is the Knives Out trilogy, what it will be, Matt and Glass Onion.
And I didn't love his stuff to begin with, but I think what I've come to realize in hindsight, and especially after seeing Poker Face, watching him kind of do stuff over and over and over again, is his secret like kind of genius is in the simplicity of his ideas and how he executes, especially with these last couple of projects he's done.
Yep.
He kind of just nails it very simply, which is hard to do.
Yeah, his way of like framing a scene and filming it in a way where you get a piece of the story and then from a completely different character's perception, it can be seen differently, mm-hmm. which then kind of unveils another layer, is genius, I think. Because that happens a lot in Glass Onion and Knives Out.
Yeah.
Because there's so many players at play in these stories of the whodunit stories. You kind of get more of the story when they interact with each other. And then as the audience member, you slowly piece it together yourself. And I think it's just so layered but so simple, like you said. It's really well done.
And I think I was watching him talk about these two films and the character of Benoit Blanc, who's played by Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
His genius with that is he's like, we can't have the audience get to know him too well because he's actually not the central character in these stories, but he's the detective that comes into their world and drives it. So you don't actually know much about him, and he's kind of kept it that way intentionally, where the protagonists are obviously in Knives Out. It was Ana de Armas' character. I can't think what her name is. As the help, essentially.
Yeah, she was to the family. The family. Rich family, yeah.
And then in the sequel, well, quote-unquote sequel, I think Netflix wanted to make a saga. He's like, okay, cool. Was obviously Janelle Monáe.
Yeah, she was phenomenal in
She's amazing.
She's really good in it. Two different mysteries and different styles of mysteries as well. I love in the second one in Glass Onion where Edward Norton is playing basically a version of Elon Musk, right? Like he's this super rich
tech billionaire
who's got a bunch of friends who he invites to an island to play a murder mystery party. And Daniel Craig's character gets invited by mistake, but you don't find out till later. He's invited as well. And they're running this murder mystery party and he works it out in the first 30 seconds.
He's like, that's beautiful. He throws a tantrum.
A great scene. And Edward Norton being the childish character that he is gets really screwed up because it's all, the whole thing was based on them trying to work out
for the whole weekend.
Genius.
I've forgotten that's how it sort of initially starts. And then obviously there's a real murder
that happens later.
Oh, no, whodunit.
Yeah.
I think I enjoyed Glass Onion more than Knives Out.
So did I. I saw it in the cinema.
Glass Onion?
Yeah.
I saw Knives Out in the cinema and I was very mad when I came out of that.
Yeah.
That was my expectations. Reverse. I've now learned that. Yeah, I think the trailer for Knives Out made it seem more like a family playoff between all the crazies in that family, and then I didn't get that, and I just couldn't understand why you would put such interesting characters in a film and then stick us with the most boring of them. But on a rewatch and a couple of years later where I'm a bit smarter now, I'm like, I get it. You're trying to mimic all of these Agatha Christies and those kind of things. So actually, sorry, maybe you did deserve the Academy Award.
Yeah, potentially.
I was so angry for a long time about it.
See, I was the same when I saw Knives Out the first time as well. I was like, I thought this was going to be a typical, everyone's going to be at the house at once, like then the person would die, then they'd all be stuck in that one location and then try and work it out. But it's not as simple as that. There's way more happening, right?
Hold on, we're dumb, Shannon. That's what we've learned.
No, it's just that's the perception that I was given going into it. The trailer gave you that, And when I put it on, because I didn't see it at the cinema, I bought the 4K version when it came out. I chucked it on and I was like, all right, you're right. This is what I'm going to watch. And then, the perception was just different. So I was like, and it took me a while to kind of process that as well. But in hindsight, it's like, okay, I loved it.
It's like, oh, hang on, wait.
Hang on, I actually really like that.
Sorry, Ryan. Sorry to judge you. Maybe you, us.
Maybe it's
smarter than us. It's our fault. Like, writer, director,
And then when Glass Onion came out and it had that it had a limited theatrical release of 1 week in cinemas before it came out, come to Netflix.
That's right. I think we wanted to watch it and then we didn't.
I went. I think you might have been busy, but I went and saw it. I went by myself and saw it and I was like, I'm glad I saw this in the cinema. I feel like it's better in cinema.
Yeah, I wish I'd seen it in cinema. But
you don't have your phone. You're not Googling anything. There's no distractions. You're taking in the entire mystery. Yeah, it's one of those, it's better in the cinema experiences.
I'm doing better of not touching my phone watching movies. Getting rid of social media helps.
No, I'm doing better as well. I put my phone further away. I turn it upside down so I can't see notifications. Just take in a film. It's better that way. Because so often I'll be like, you know, like it's a bit of a story beat.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a lull in the story. It's character development.
You're not your favorite characters on the screen.
Yeah, so I'm like, what's happening? You know, I'll play a bit of the, you know, the numbers game and keep going. I get distracted and then I'm not fully taking in the story.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to be better as well.
Let's not be elitist, but also cinema's dying and it's the fault of TikTok.
I don't want to help that.
No, me either. So we're going backwards.
Yeah, kind of.
Which is fine.
We are going backwards, which is fine. Let's talk about the elephant in the room.
Yeah, let's talk about Star Wars.
The big one.
I think this was the first Star Wars film I saw in cinemas.
Yeah, maybe. You didn't see Force Awakens in cinema? Because that was 2015, whereas this is 2017. I can't remember.
No, so I don't think in 2015 I'd seen a Star Wars film properly.
Fair enough. You were a little bit younger. Oh, you would have been about, what, 18? 19?
I went through my first year of film school having not seen Star Wars. Do you know how many times I referenced that in 101? A lot.
Well, I think it's just got so many building blocks of...
I'd seen
bits, so many other sci-fi films.
Well, like, we talked about this in...
Space operas.
Obviously, the Star Wars episode we did, yep. Like way, way back.
Yeah.
God, I didn't know how long ago that was.
It was like the first six episodes of last year.
Yeah. But I'd seen bits of it with a kid who was... very much in it. He was autistic and it was his special interest. So he was in it.
Yeah.
And it was the prequels. So right before any beat of action would happen, he would excitedly tell me what was about to happen, which is so sweet. And I cannot tell you how much I love it when people love something so much. Like it was
you
great.
You get into it because of it.
But me as a viewer of a film I'd never seen, I was like, God damn, every time. Every time. So I sort of hadn't seen them in the best way.
No. What about these ones?
What about them?
Like, did you see him the same way? Did he explain every...
No. So it was only the prequels that got ruined, yeah, which isn't really a big thing. And then I went back and I watched everything from, you know, as it was released, which I think is the best way to watch them because they start off fantastic.
Yeah, let's talk about this one because it is different. It's a different Star Wars film. So for a number of reasons, it's written differently. The story, it's hard because Force Awakens came out in the sequel trilogy 2 years earlier, and it was essentially a soft reboot of...
It was written by Lawrence Kasdan, the original.
Yeah,
so.
The New Hope. It was basically a New Hope for a new generation. Yeah. And it was received very well, very well. And then Rian Johnson was asked to write and direct the second one, which was a couple of years even before, I think, the first one came out. So I don't know how much they got to talk about where their story needed to go, but I feel like his direction was different than what maybe the whole arcing story was planned. They introduce a lot of things. I think I mentioned to you the other day, they introduce fuel in the Star Wars universe for the first time.
Yeah.
Because the film is essentially one giant chase scene, right?
Like, yeah, it is. Because I remember.
The first little part, they're on the run from the First Order because the First Order has found them since the Starkiller base got exploded.
Yep.
They escape into light speed. It's the first time that any kind of ship has been tracked on light
That's
speed.
That's right.
And then they track them through light speed and then they chase them for the rest of the film. Most of this film
this
takes
is
place
is the one with General whatever her name is and Leia's in the ship as well, hey?
Yeah.
It's, and then the bit, yeah.
Yeah, Leia's the one where she gets exploded out and then she kind of force.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah, look.
Anyway, but yeah, I'm trying to just piece together this film.
And I watched a few background, because I've seen this and I watched a little bit of it yesterday as well. I watched probably 2/3 of this movie yesterday. And I watched a few making ofs or like a little snippets of him like while on set. And he was like, everyone's going to expect Empire Strikes Back. Because it's in the same vein as what happened previously where everyone saw The Force Awakens. They got a new hope. So they're going to expect Empire Strikes Back. Now, everyone knows that Empire Strikes Back is probably the most well-regarded film in the entire
Star Wars universe.
It's everyone's favorite. It's darker. Essentially, the good guys don't win. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's right, because Han gets frozen in carbonite.
Luke loses his hand and finds out that the worst person in the world is his actual father.
We've been there, Luke. That's right.
But it's also, it's well-structured. It's got an... Like it's very serialized. It's got an A story and a B story once they kind of leave Hoth. So you got an A story where Luke goes and trains with Yoda.
Yes, that's
right. And then the B story is where Han Solo and Leia are on there traveling to meet up with Lando to fix the Millennium Falcon. Both the stories come together when they get onto Cloud City and then he's got to confront Darth Vader. It's a very easy thing to follow. When you've got The Last Jedi, there's about seven or four or five like C stories essentially.
Yeah.
And they've all interconnecting and at different points. And think
about how many films come before that even. Like, yeah, there's like
how things are structured in general, like, right?
Like lore and stuff too to deal with at that point. Like it's
yeah.
not like there's nothing at this point.
I think it was overpopulated with concepts. He also wrote himself into a story with having every single main character on the chase ship besides Rey. So you really could have just had Rey's as the A story learning off Luke Skywalker in the vein of Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
But what he wanted to do was he wanted to subvert expectations because he was like, everyone's going to expect Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
I want to make that different. So he had that element, but then he also wanted to make it very different. So then what the B story was like six things happening at once. You had like Rose and Finn go off to that like Monte Carlo planet
That's
for like
right.
half an hour for literally no point.
Yeah.
Because they're there to find a like worldwide renowned code breaker, but then they do some like stupid stuff by like getting caught by the police there, so they can't get that code breaker. And then when they're in the prison, they get another code breaker who turns out to be Benedict Del Toro, who's actually a dodgy person who actually betrays them when they get back to the ship. Okay, there's a lot happening in that B story. It just needed to be refined. I think there's great elements in this film. I think there's stuff with Rey and Kylo Ren, how they have that force connection. They really should have dug deeper and explored that a little bit further. I think so,
that's obviously the biggest thing in the next film, but there's not a lot in that.
Because the damage was done by the third one, the studio was trying to auto-correct.
They didn't give Kylo Ren enough in that second film to have him feel like a worthy villain either. Well, I think he was weak as a villain.
Yes, but only because they didn't explore the connection between the two characters well enough. I think there's a part in the film, and I'm going to talk about spoilers because, yet again, it's been like five or six years since it came out.
Yeah, just spoiler, I guess.
Because he's done with all of it. He's done with the Sith. He's done with the Jedi. He just wants, he even says it. He's like, throw away the past. Like, forget the past to Rey once they have that fight scene in Snoke's throne room and he kills Snoke. You know, he does that thing where he force moves the saber and then turns it on and cuts him in half. I actually love this scene. It's one of my favorite scenes in Star Wars. Is then he fights the Red Guards, him and Rey. They're fighting on the same side. The whole ship kind of catches fire and then everyone's dead except for those two. And he turns to her and goes, come with me. Like, let's see where this goes together. Not Sith, not Jedi. Let's try and rule together and see what that actually looks like. I feel like if they just explored that with some depth, I think it would have been a much more interesting third movie. Like, because they play on the fact that Rey is also a gray area character in the third one.
Yeah, it's sort of that going back to like other like Harry Potter thing where he's like, oh, there's light and dark inside of you and like, what are you going to do? You're pulled by both sides. Yeah. Mm.
So if they double down on that rather than where they go, because she obviously just, the studio obviously didn't want great, they want good and baddies. Yay.
Yeah.
But he clearly wanted to have this gray market characters with both Kylo Ren and Rey because it would have been interesting because there's such a connection between the two. So then the third act, which this movie goes for 2.5 hours. It's like the longest Star Wars film in the whole saga. They create this extra act where she pisses off from the ship somehow. There's literally one line where one of the bosses goes, oh, she stole Snoke's ship.
Huh.
Okay, she's just out of that scene then. And Kylo Ren proceeds to make himself supreme leader after killing Snoke, even though he just said it just before then in the same scene that he's done with the Sith, he's done with the Jedi, but then immediately becomes the leader of the Sith. Like, you're like, First Order, and like, okay. He writes himself into corners way too often with this film. I think it was too big of a project for Ryan at the time. And I think he struggled with what everyone expects from a Star Wars film. There's too much pressure.
But then my other point is as well, because this was obviously part him, part George Lucas, because he obviously has ownership.
He has ownership, right? But I don't think he has much to say in this.
I'm like, how much did you have to say, but also how much did Disney as a studio come in and start giving so many notes?
Hey,
Ryan, did you have an idea for where you wanted it? Yes. Mm. Okay, good. Was that succinct? Maybe. But then did the studio come and go, oh, no, you can't have that. No, you can't have – can we have it like this? Mm-hmm. Can we have this? Can we have that? And I wonder if that's what messed it a lot. Because Disney is obviously black and white, good and bad. Mm. And I wonder if that messed up a lot of it and it got to a point where
– I hope not, but I know that they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know they would have. And I think that's why you get that final act where the motivations through the movie don't make sense in that last act.
Because, like, obviously some of Ryan's early stuff, you know, it's not perfect. But the stuff he did, his last couple projects, have been pretty spot on.
Well, that's when I was going to talk to you about Looper.
And pretty strong in terms of, you know, structure, you know, story, you know how to tell something.
I think he's a great...
So I'm wondering,
cinematographer,
what happened in that middle bit of your career where it didn't? It was kind of messy because you're not a messy writer director.
No,
typically.
No, look, that Star Wars film's polarizing. I think people, but that's also the fandom as well.
Yeah,
it's a very toxic fandom. I think it's the weakest of the sequel trilogy because it's messy. Yeah, I think I agree. A great starting point, and then this happened. And then the third one was just auto-correcting.
Mm-hmm. Damage control.
Damage control, third film. So a bit disappointing, that Last Jedi. But Looper, you watched that the other day.
Yeah, I watched that this week. I hadn't seen it before and I really wanted to watch it.
Mm. Another time loop film? Mm.
I enjoyed it. It wasn't my favorite time loop film, but then like...
What is?
It's hard to do.
There's so many.
No, I really, really did enjoy this one. I think it was... strong.
The fact that this came before Last Jedi, it tells me, like you just said, I think he's got the chops to do it. I think Star Wars was too big of a ship for him. I think he was coming off the back of a couple of indies. Looper was a sleeper hit. Mm-hmm. The budget was $30 million and it made $178 million. Like a huge moneymaker. I think that's why he was we'll give you a Star Wars film. You know, you've clearly made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And you know what you're kind of doing. But even then, I think the vessel was too big.
Yeah, I enjoyed Looper. I think there were some bits that maybe were a bit messy. Like it obviously started off, I think when I was watching it, it felt like it started off as one thing and finished as something else. That being said, I wasn't mad with what it ended up being. I enjoyed the performances in it as well.
My favorite standout part is, you know, his friend, the Paul Dano character?
Yeah.
Where that loop, where they're talking about like what can happen mm-hmm. with that character if you don't catch them, and then what can happen. And I love the part where they literally capture the younger him and they're writing a dress on his arm and it appears on the old version, and they're just cutting off parts of him. And then you see him trying to get to this place and then you see just disappearing. And I was like, oh.
I was a bit
graphic,
lost,
but great, great film.
A bit lost at the very, very beginning of this film because I was like, what world are we in?
Yeah.
What are the rules? What's the plot? Like, where is this going?
There is a lot at you quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it's sort of a lot at the start and then like is slower at the end. But I still quite enjoyed it, actually. I think Emily Blunt was an interesting character to put in.
Yeah, because she was like not off, like she wasn't huge then. No. Like it was 2012.
She was amazing in this, by the way, as someone that's Southern.
She's a wonderful actress.
But I think it was important to have that beat at that time because it humanized
the younger version of
Bruce Willis's character, Joe? Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah, he was Joe actually.
He's Joe,
It did make sense and it gave him like the stakes were higher than just himself, which I think you needed because obviously time travel gets to a point often where it's very selfish because how can it not be,
you're the exactly. You're the only ones
you can doctor your own
time. So
story and or loop in this. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought
think it was smart.
The final revelation of what happens to complete this story, I was like, okay, that actually makes sense. Yeah. I love the journey that we got to for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great, and I thought, like you said, I think the acting was really good.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of his early stuff like Brick and Brothers Bloom, but I did find it interesting. So he went to film school.
Yeah.
Tried to get Brick made for about 8 years, couldn't get it made.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah, got it made and it went gangbusters.
Yeah, apparently. That's how we got Brothers Bloom.
Found it. But yeah, do want to find his early stuff.
I was going to talk to you. So in between his first two films, which we haven't caught because it's hard to find, but before he did Looper, he did a couple episodes of Breaking Bad. Now, I looked this up when you kind of mentioned this to me. He did three episodes. He did one earlier in season four called The Fly. Now, this one is everyone knows The Fly episode because it's a bottle episode.
I've not seen Breaking Bad.
Right. Well, I won't give spoilers away.
No one had it on their hard drive when I was in high school, so that ended very quickly.
You're going to have a lot of people go, really? You haven't seen it?
I know.
It's considered one of the best TV shows ever made, and I would probably be up there and say it as well.
Oh, no, I agree with everyone. But I was a kid with no access to it. So I think I watched one episode and then went, oh, I don't have the rest.
So the showrunner of this, I think his name is Vince Gillen, I think. Anyway, he was over budget for this season by quite a bit. So for him to rein in the budget, they wrote in a bottle episode where, if you're not sure what a bottle episode is, it's where you have your main characters in one setting for the entire episode. So you had
Breakfast Club is like a bottle.
Yeah, film. Exactly. It's in one place. It's in one setting. So they had Walter White and Jesse in the meth creating lab for the entire episode. And it's considered a really good episode. A lot of people didn't like it because not much happens. But then you go, okay, what actually happens in this episode? There's a lot of character development between these two.
Well, there has to be.
And they hash out a lot of stuff that's been kind of building to this point. So it was a really good episode. But it's called The Fly because a lot of the catalyst of this episode is there's an actual fly in the meth lab. And you can't have that because it needs to be a sterile environment. So, like, most of the episodes, they literally stop cooking and they're just trying to catch this fly.
I mean, that makes sense. You try and do anything, especially any type of cooking, and there's a fly.
Yeah. You
that's can't. The main event.
So, that's what drives this episode. And it's really well done. It's very well done. And I didn't realize it was a Rian Johnson directed episode, but that's really cool. He did another one in between then and the finale, but he didn't do the finale episode, but he did probably one of the penultimate episodes, I think it's two before the finale.
Oh, they're big ones.
It's considered probably the best episode of TV ever created. It gets 10 out of 10s across the board.
Good for him.
I can't say why because it's heavy, heavy spoiler territory.
Oh, look, I probably know half what happens anyway.
Still not going to. But, okay. I have seen that episode and it is definitely the most sugareth episode of the entire show. So props to him for doing the part where Breaking Dad, Malcolm in the Middle, it hits that point and you're like, wow, this is what cements why Breaking Bad is considered one of the best shows ever created for TV. Phenomenal, phenomenal episode of TV. So for him to direct it, props to him. I just didn't realize it.
Not seen it.
And I guess that's... most of our stuff on Rian Johnson. Yeah. He's obviously doing – so what's coming for him is he is going to be doing
– season two of Poker Face.
Season two of Poker Face is on its way. It's definitely been greenlit. I'm sure they're just coming up with the
– it got greenlit nearly immediately. It was insane.
Yeah, when it came out. So, but then they had the writer's strike last year, so I don't think anything got to paper just yet. And that's the same with Knives Out 3. He said he's got the setting. He's got the characters.
Oh, that's right. He was like, oh, I'm writing, but I haven't written. Oh, I love him so much.
You're like, oh, I know exactly what you mean when you're in that point.
That's me right now. I'm writing.
Writing, but it's not on paper. It's not on paper, which means you haven't wrote it. Concepts are there, which is great, but it's not actually.
Yeah, I'm in the fun part of writing where it's all in my head and it's genius. And then I sit down and
How do you process when you get to that point? Do you have to have it structurally correct or do you just get something down on paper and then work with it? You know what I'm trying to say there?
Yeah. So I was taught to write by someone who wrote for a lot of TV. So she really made sure that we were good writers. She's like, I don't want you to be lazy if you want a job out of this, which look, she's coming from a different time where there were jobs in it. Now there's not so much. So
they've tried. Go figure.
But it was kind of like, I'm going to teach you to have discipline so that if you were to go into the industry, you've got discipline. So I very much write, there's a lot of scribbling in notebooks for a very long time. Just any ideas go down. And then I'm sort of very anal. I will usually do scene breakdowns if I've got it and have it all. I mean, rough, but scene breakdowns.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Have everything that's going to happen, where it happens, everything like that. And then I sit down with that plan and then I write. Mm-hmm. Which I think it does help me in a sense because you know where you're going by the time the scene ends, what and you need, you know what beats need to you need to hit. And then I just go through and I just rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. Usually I'll go and I'll be like, okay, this time I'm going and taking a pass and I'm like looking for like subtext. So then I'll go through and I'll do all subtext. Or like, oh, how can I cut dialogue? Okay, how can I, then I'll do that. And it's that kind of thing. Like each time I look at it, I'll try and focus on something else and make sure it's all.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, some I'm like, oh, okay, is everything important? Or is this, you know, that kind of thing. And then I just whittle it down and whittle it down and whittle it down.
It's a process.
Send it to someone, get their feedback, that kind of thing.
We move on.
That like that's kind of how I do it. I'm not really don't really know the character. Oh, and I do all character stuff before I even do anything. I figure out who they are, what they're
more important. Yeah.
Like, you know, what happened to them as a kid? What happened to them? Like, and I kind of have, obviously it changes as you write and you can do whatever,
you
but
can
I
can tweak it.
I kind of like to know who they are before I sit down. And then I'm real anal about it. I don't really just, some writers just go, oh, we're just going to sit down and see where it takes me. And I'll write like 300 pages and then I'll like, you know, Greta Gerwig does just thousands of stuff and then she whittles it down and finds a story in it.
Different process.
But that stresses me. Like, I don't think.
You don't operate
I would
way.
Get so lost, I think, doing it that way. But maybe I should try it that way because I haven't written that much. Like, start to finish, got it ready to go, which is what I need to do this year. But talking about it instead of writing. So, you know.
We're in that talking phase. It's fine.
Yeah, but I did tell my friend that I need a deadline in a couple of weeks. So this week, I think I've got to sit down. Mm. But anyway, I'm really excited to see what Rian Johnson does because he's a way better writer than I am.
I think he is. He's quite a smart writer. Yeah, he's a very smart, intelligent man.
He's someone that I'm like, oh, cool. I want to be able to do what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're doing it very, very well lately. Mm. Also, you can do the crossword quickly. I can't.
I can barely do any crossword.
I'm not that. I'm going to get there. He's got a few years on me though. So
he's got a couple there.
Yeah. But that was this week. So thanks so much for listening. We're about to do an episode where you can write in and tell us what to do. So by that point, you'll have told us what to watch and we will have watched it.
But it's a different week, which we're looking forward to.
Yeah. So you can find us on Instagram, Twitter and TikTok at BingeLists, or you can email us at bingelistsandboxofficehits@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, guys. I'm loving this new year. I am hoping you guys love it too.
Yes, it's been great. It's been really good this year. We've had a lot of fun.
So yeah, we've got sort of the next whatever's planned out. But if you have an idea for us, write in and we'll see what we can do and try and make an episode for you guys. But thank you so much and happy Monday if you're listening on Monday.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Bye.